Hello, my name is Stephen Bigelow, features writer with Tech Target Storage Media Group, and I'm speaking with Bill Tolson, email archiving expert with Contoro Incorporated of Mountain View, California. Bill, thanks for joining us today to talk about email archiving.
Well, thanks, Dave.
Bill, there are lots of questions about archiving, and email archiving in particular, so let's tackle some of the most frequent questions that you've encountered recently. And I think the place to start is to talk about handling your long-term plans. Should you wait to adopt an email archiving system if you have near-term plans to migrate your email system to a newer version already?
Yeah, that's a question that we get quite a bit, and it's a great question because people are wondering, do they need to wait to look at email archiving before they move to a newer version of their email system and so on. The answer, I think, probably goes against what most people would think, and the answer is really no. In most cases, it's a much better idea to go ahead and go forward with installing and bringing up an email archiving system before you make the migration to a newer version of your email system. And the real reason for that is, and it's pretty simple once you think about it, what happens when you create an email archive in most cases is that eventually you get to the point where you're moving a lot of the email off of the email servers onto archive servers. So with that in mind, when you migrate to from, say, Exchange 2000 to 2003 or something like that, if you have an email archiving system already in place, you basically have a lot less email on the email server that you need to migrate. So commonsensically, what you're doing is you're lowering the amount or reducing the amount of data on the email servers that you're going to have to migrate by doing an email archive system first.
And that would probably enhance the performance of your email server.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Are there any special regulatory requirements for media storage in an email archiving system?
Yes, there is, and it really comes down to what industry and what regulations affect your archive and your email archive. In reality, the only special media requirements that are imposed by the U.S. government and by any state governments, therefore, is on broker traders that do business in the United States. And they have a storage requirement that their correspondence, their records be stored on a worm-capable device, meaning a write once, read many, to protect it from being changed or anything like that. So this is under the auspices of SEC Rule 17. They stipulate a worm media. But other than being a broker or a trader of securities in the United States, there are no real regulatory requirements for anybody else to have any kind of special media requirements.
I think the next question really deals with in-house versus outside or hosted email archiving. But what are the advantages and disadvantages of an in-house email archiving system versus a hosted system?
Yeah, that's a question. Another question that we get asked quite a bit when we're helping customers look at the possibilities of email archiving. Basically, the two main paths they can go down is working with a hosted system, which is basically a system that you contract with an outside company to basically do it all for you. It's an outside service that basically they connect into your system, into your email server or servers, and basically capture email as they come through and basically archive it and store it somewhere else. At another location somewhere, and usually that is done priced via an annual contract. So you'll pay so much per mailbox per year for the service to be there. The good things about a hosted system are that it's relatively fast to get up and running. Basically, there's nothing for the customer really to buy. There's no equipment. There's no solution. Solutions, basically this outside company, is doing all the work and providing all the solutions, and they're just hooking into the email system of the company. So it's a relatively fast implementation, and there it's relatively low cost up front, meaning in another type of solution you have to buy a lot of equipment and software and stuff, so there's a big capital equipment outlay up front. In a hosted system, there is none of that. Basically, it's an annual contract, and you're paying so much per mailbox per year. Now, the adverse of that is the hosted system versus the other potential in-house systems, which is basically where the customer purchases the email archiving solution, the servers, storage, all kinds of other neat stuff, and basically they're installing and running it themselves in their own data centers. Advantages of an in-house system, obviously, is that the customer has much more control over it because it's theirs and it's sitting in their data center, and basically they have daily control. But they also have daily responsibility for it. So some of the disadvantages for an in-house system are, first and foremost, upfront costs. There's a big, usually a pretty sizable capital equipment outlay up front to purchase the stuff. There's also a requirement, for the customer to either find, hire, or go to consultants to get the kind of expertise to help them set up their email archiving systems for regulatory requirements or for litigation requirements, and there are specific things that you really need to be aware of. Those are really the two you're looking at: a hosted system, which is really an outside service, and the in-house system where the customer basically is buying their own equipment and running their own systems.
Yeah, let me expand on that question just a little bit, very briefly. If you go to a hosted system, what are the regulatory requirements for their storage? Or that is, how would your regulatory requirements for storage affect that host provider?
Well, and that's yet another advantage of a hosted service provider is that usually they have staff that are well-versed in the various regulations from, North America, EU, these kinds of things. So they're going to have a pretty good idea of usually how long do I need to keep something based on these regulations. For example, there are HIPAA requirements for healthcare providers. There are SEC requirements for financial institutions. There are banking regulations. There's Sarbanes-Oxley. There's numerous various regulations. A hosted solution provider will have people on staff who are, again, well-versed in these regulations and can say and know for a fact that these kinds of records, this kind of content, these kinds of emails need to be kept for 3 years or 5 years or 1 year. And they're basically set to go ahead, and once the email archiving system is set up at the hosted place, they could set the policies that automatically will store the emails, track the life cycles, and basically delete them at the end of their retention period. In-house providers or an in-house solution, basically you have to purchase that expertise and know those kinds of things so that you can set your own policies.
Excellent. Email archiving does have an impact on your network. Can you tell us if email archiving takes huge amounts of bandwidth?
That's a great question, and the answer is it depends. And it depends on a couple of things. The first thing is it depends on what kind of email archiving system you're putting in place. And when I say that, I mean, are you putting a system in place to basically capture or archive emails after 60 days or 90 days or 180 days and move them off to an archive, meaning that, let's say, for example, an employee has emails going from their mailbox on a daily basis, and as we all know, these things tend to are not real good about cleaning their mailboxes out. A basic email archiving system would be tracking those emails based on, for example, when it came into the email system. And if you had a policy, an archiving policy that said, gee, after an email ages 60 days on our email server, we're going to move it off to an archive and replace it with a pointer. That's basically what you're going to look at is that's a batch type of processing. And no, it does not require a whole bunch of bandwidth. The email archiving solution set that requires more bandwidth is if you're journaling emails, and that means if you're capturing copies, the moment they're created or the moment they arrive at the email server, you capture a copy and put it on the archive. Usually people do this for regulatory or litigation reasons. If that's the case, then yes, you're going to be utilizing much more bandwidth because you're grabbing emails from the email server and moving them somewhere else on the network pretty much continuously.
And is it a good idea to check your bandwidth utilization in advance? How do you plan for the impact of bandwidth on email archiving?
Yeah, that's something that an end user or an IT manager would need to try to figure out. And again, there's a bunch of data collection that you need to do to figure these kinds of things out. You know, an IT manager, an email manager would need to look at first, you know, what's the average number of mailboxes per email server do I have? What's the average traffic per employee or mailbox? You know, how many emails on the average does an employee send and receive per day? What's the average size of those emails? And then you'd be able to get an idea of at least the average, you know, traffic that would be moving through the email system and through the network on a you know, minute by minute or hour by hour basis. Then you would need to determine, am I going to journal? Am I going to capture copies real time and move them off to an archive? Or am I going to do a batch process, you know, at midnight or something like that? So there's some basic data collection that somebody would need to look at, and then they would need to compare that with their current bandwidth allotments, for example, and compare that to basically what they would be drawing if they did do this more intensive type of journaling. That would help them decide, number one, whether they were going to do a batch process at you know, 12 at night or 1 o'clock in the morning versus doing a real-time capture as emails happened.
Excellent. You know, talk to us a little bit about single-instance storage. I've read that single-instance storage is important when you're looking at an email archiving solution. Can you tell us if that's true and why?
Yeah, I agree. Basically, single instance storage, for those people who don't realize what it is basically what it does is in an email system. For example, I'll give you an example here. Say an HR department at a company of 1,000 people sends out an email to all 1,000 employees saying we're going to be having a company picnic in 2 weeks, and attached is a 1 megabyte JPEG map showing you where to go. Over time, you know, if all 1,000 employees get that, and you know, all 1,000 employees basically leave those on the email servers, or even worse, create their own personal archives, what you will see is many, many, many copies, anywhere from tens to 1,000 copies of that 1 megabyte file. And if all of those emails were moved into the archive, you potentially could have, you know, 1,000 emails at 1 megabyte each taking up storage on an archive server, for example. What you want to make sure is that when you're looking at email archiving solution, you want to make sure that the solution incorporates the ability to create one copy of that email and that 1 megabyte map, JPEG map, so that there's only one copy in the archive versus up to 1,000. That way you save, number one, a great deal of storage space potentially over time. But it also is much easier for a system to track the life cycle of a single, you know, copy of a message versus 1,000 to basically run it through its life cycle and potentially delete it at the end of its retention period, for example. It's easier to delete one than it is 1,000 and keep track of 1,000. So single incidents, number one, it saves money, but it's also easier on the system to track and to basically map the life cycle of the emails.
Oh, great insight, Bill. Terrific. Our next question deals a bit with employee privacy. Legally speaking, is it a violation of an individual employee's privacy to archive their email?
Yeah, that's probably from employees when I'm working with customers. That's probably the most asked question. And the answer is it depends. In the United States, in the 50 United States, basically there is no assumption, or there should be no assumption by the employee for any privacy within a company email system. Most companies that I know of, basically when you first sign on to an email system for the first time, you get a nice big splash screen that says, you know, this is a company asset, no expectation of privacy, you know, be used for company business, you know, only, those kinds of things. So in the United States law, basically there are numerous precedents that basically point out that no one, an employee should not expect privacy within the email system. Now, outside the United States, it's somewhat different, especially, for example, in Europe. Both the United Kingdom and Germany have laws called data protection acts that, besides protecting customer information, they also protect employee information under certain circumstances. And there are all kinds of little intricacies behind these laws. But one of the things that it brings up is can email within an company email system from employees be reviewed and looked at and used legally under certain circumstances. And that's really in question. I would not assume, if I were a corporate legal counsel, I would not assume that they had free rein over email systems, especially in Germany, for example. In some cases, I've seen that companies have had to get permission from the employee to basically utilize the email. So, long answer, but what it really comes down to, in the United States, no, there is no expectation of privacy. So there's nothing, you know, to basically hold you back from using the emails within a corporate email system. Outside the United States, you really need to talk with your corporate legal counsels about that.
Excellent. Bill, the next question is sort of a chicken and egg question. Is it important to have an email retention policy in place before you look at an email archiving solutions or not?
Yeah, that's also one of those questions that we see a lot, and it's also one of the problems we see a lot. And I'll even go a step higher. You know, an email retention policy. In reality, companies should put a records retention policy in place before they look at solutions for any kind of archiving. And the reason for that is that, again, most companies in at least the United States, but probably all over the world, have various regulations, whether you're a private company or a public company or anything like that. There are data retention regulations for almost anybody who employs and does business in the United States. So understanding those before you go out and spend money on technology and solutions and consulting and these kinds of things basically will help you out. I have seen one of the bigger problems I've seen over time with companies when we go in to help them is that they decided that they had a problem. They went out and bought technology and solutions, and then after the fact determined that there were really other problems they needed to solve, and the technology they bought really doesn't answer that. So the most common sense and the first step task in understanding what you need to do and how you're going to do it is really to create the retention policy, in this case an email retention policy, so that you understand exactly what you need to be doing and what kind of technology you're going to need to answer it before you go actually spend the money.
Great. Bill, in terms of capturing email, is it important to capture email metadata in the archive? And if so, why?
The answer is, in my opinion, the answer is yes, it's important. And the reason for that is that metadata within the email, as an email goes, is created and goes to an email system. Basically, it has various types of metadata associated with it, including where it came from. You know, under certain circumstances, the path the servers had hit to get there. Who created all these kinds of neat things. And under legal situations, for example, if a company is being sued or suing another company and they're going to be discovering or asking for emails within the system, being able to have the metadata around the message or messages to prove that it's an original message, it came, you know, through this kind of system, you know, it hit the email server at this specific time, and this person basically reviewed it at this time. All of this kind of metadata basically helps usually in under legal circumstances to prove originality of the message and that it hasn't been altered and these kinds of things. So if you have a choice, and I think most people do, you want to make sure that you're archiving. If you are archiving email, you want to archive the entire email message and attachment and its associated metadata so that you have a full picture of what that email was and what it included.
Excellent. Bill, another issue that comes up is indexing. What is email archive indexing, and which type of indexing do you recommend?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's one of those questions that people don't think about or companies don't think about until after they've gone out and spent a lot of money on a solution. And there is a wide range of indexing capabilities and these kinds of things. Basically, indexing under these circumstances mean that as an email, for example, is moved to an archive, you want to basically open and recognize and create an index of all terms within that email, within its attachment, to basically create a searchable body so that later, once it's in the archive, or once you have millions and millions of emails in the archive, you can search for certain circumstances, for certain content, for example, across all the emails. Now, Microsoft and Lotus Notes, Microsoft Exchange and Lotus Notes, do a pretty good job of indexing and making searchable all the content in the body of the messages, but I don't think to this point either one of them actually search and index attachments. Now, in email archiving solution, in most cases, you have the ability to at least turn on a full index, and again, what that means is later on you're going to be able to do searches for specific emails in the archive without having to pull those messages back and do what IT people call a crawl to walk through each email and look for terms that you're looking for. A master index gives you the ability to do almost instantaneous searches across your whole email archive to look for occurrences of certain content. Why is that important? Well, it's important for the employee because we've found, and I think most market analysts companies have found, that employees do reuse old emails. They do go back and reuse content, reuse attachments and those kinds of things, and they do spend a decent amount of time in the system looking for those emails. As those emails, if they were to be moved into archive system, basically you would have a huge hit in employee productivity because they'd be spending more and more time in the email archive looking for old emails to reuse. If you have a master index that's searchable relatively quickly, then employees are going to spend a lot less time and they're going to raise their productivity up by being able to find those messages that they want to reuse. Even more importantly, when it comes to legal situations, your corporate legal counsel is you know presented with a discovery order asking for specific emails from these people with this kind of content, a master index allows those emails and only those emails to be found and turned over very rapidly versus having to go through the entire email message store, review them by hand, paying a lawyer $300 an hour to basically read each email and see if it met the content requirements. So a couple of things, user productivity as well as legal productivity, litigation productivity are probably the two most important things when it comes to indexing. I basically, and I think most people would recommend that you look at purchasing a solution that will at least give you the choice of indexing the header information or the message body or the entire attachment or all of the above. Doesn't mean you have to turn all those on, but at least to have that ability is probably a real good idea.
Great. So, some organizations may find themselves with a mixed email system using, say, Exchange and Notes. What's the impact of a mixed email system, and what can you do about it?
Yeah, that's actually a real life situation that we've run into many times when we've gone out and worked with companies. We have, we might be called in by a company that has both a Microsoft Exchange and a Notes Domino email system, and they want to basically tie a company-wide or an enterprise-wide archive together so that the emails and the attachments are searchable across the whole enterprise. Now, this does happen actually quite often, and usually it happens when a company, for example, with Exchange goes out and purchases another company with another email system, and in a lot of cases it's Notes Domino. And, over a period of a year or so, as they basically integrate the company, they come to they finally get to the point where they want to combine email systems and, or at least create an enterprise-wide archive, and then they notice that there's a problem there. Many years ago, 2000, 2001, 2002, basically what you were going to have to look at would be two email archiving systems. But since then, the vendors have gotten pretty good about creating the ability to combine disparate or unlike email systems into a centralized archive. And most, not all, by the way, it's a good question to ask a potential vendor, but most of them do have the ability to tie different types of email systems together into a centralized archive. But again, if that's something that you potentially would run across in the future, if your company does go out and purchase other companies on a regular basis or semi-regular basis, that's a great question to ask the vendor if the solutions you're looking in have that capability. If you're not in that situation and it doesn't look like you ever will be, then probably not. But you'd be surprised how many companies we've run across who have gotten themselves into that situation. It's very painful to basically put two email archiving systems in place. It's also very difficult to try to go backwards. So ask these questions ahead of time, especially of the vendors, and you'll save a lot of time and money.
Well, email archiving can introduce some complexity, and that's difficult for a lot of organizations. What's the biggest mistake you see companies make when adopting an email archiving solution?
The biggest mistake that I have seen, and it's almost universal, is that a company will react to a specific event and go out and purchase automation, go out and purchase equipment and solutions without fully understanding what all of the problems are that they need to solve. And, in a great example was a couple of years ago, many, many companies were reacting to the Sarbanes-Oxley laws, and they were basically, reviewing the laws, and their legal counselors were telling them, oh, boy, you need to do these things. You need to archive this stuff. And many, many, many companies, went out and purchased the first solution they saw, after the fact, after they had spent the money and gotten it installed, then the other problems that they should have recognized started to crop up. Now, there are really four or five main problems companies look at to solve when it comes to email archiving. You know, the first one, obviously, is regulatory requirements. If you're in a regulated industry that requires some, you know, various types of data retention, then that's one thing. The next problem that many companies have, not all, but many, is litigation problems or litigation discovery problems, and that really revolves around, you know, if you are being sued by an outside entity, whether it be an individual or another company, many times they will want specific documents or records from your system that helps them prove their case. Almost every time they will go after your email system and want to discover that. So having certain capabilities around litigation, around the ability to hold, put immediate holds on, to be able to find content quickly, is yet another major problem that companies also look at. Another problem is storage, just storage management. As we know, basically an email systems can take up large amounts of storage space, even if the company has mailbox requirements or mailbox limits that limit an employee to, say, 40 or 50 megabytes worth of email. Many companies will find after they've imposed this that those emails have migrated from the email server up to the network server in the form of, for example, PSTs. And you'll find large numbers of 1 and 2 gigabyte PSTs up on the network servers. So storage management is yet a third one. You know, another one is basically user productivity. There are many measurements from various companies that show that users do spend a certain amount of time within email systems, and if you can shorten that amount of time, if you can help them manage their mailbox easier, if you can help them find information faster, then there's a net productivity gain there. The biggest problem we see is that a company will one of those problems will crop up, and they'll go out and buy a solution that answers that one problem, not taking into consideration the other ones. So completely understanding all of the problems that you potentially would want to solve with a solution is really the best way to go, and that's really the biggest mistake I've seen in my years doing that.
So with premature acquisition of technology being the biggest mistake, are there any other major mistakes that you see companies making when they acquire email archiving technology?
Yeah, and it relates back to one of the other questions, and in this case, the second biggest mistake that we see is that they do not bother to put an email retention policy or create an email retention policy before they go out and buy the technology. So, once you purchase the technology and you're looking and you're installing it, what policies are you going to set in it as you turn it on? Creating a company-wide policy with all major departments or all major aspects of the company included in the decision-making process for the policy will help you set those system policies later on. I've seen companies basically get to the point where they've gone out and made a technology choice and they've brought it in and it's sitting there and they're all looking at each other going, okay, now what do we set the policies for? And you know, creating a document retention policy or an email retention policy can take some time because you want to make sure that every, you know, major group within the company has some input as to what they need. You know, HR has very specific requirements around many data retention laws. Obviously, legal does, engineering, patent protection, you know, all kinds of things. So you want to make sure that you understand all those aspects before you try to set the policies. And by going through it, email retention policy procedure creation, then you really do understand those a lot better.
Excellent. You know, the next question has to do with, really, I think, what is an archive. I back up my email servers on a regular basis. Can't I just use those as an archive?
Yeah, that's probably the biggest, the most asked question when I'm doing seminars aren't my backup tapes my archive? And in reality, they're relying on them that way, but it's not necessarily the best archive that you can count on. Excuse me. A backup usually is a disaster recovery copy of or an image of a system, whether it be an email system or a file system, file share or group shares or these kinds of things. And it's a proprietary format of the entire server, for example. What many companies find who basically utilize backup tapes as an archive, if by law they're being directed to give me emails from these users with this date range with this kind of content in it, they can't go search that backup tape or backup tapes. What they need to do is do a restore back to a dummy server, search through all the emails, find the emails from the specific users and the date ranges, these kinds of things. A backup tape is more a disaster recovery solution than anything else. An archive, in this case an email archive, allows you to store individually and find individually each and every file or each and every email message. And when we talked about indexing before, creating an index allows you to find where that individual email is in the archive and bring it back one by one, versus having to bring back an entire server and do a search on that. So, they both serve useful purposes, but an archive basically is a way to more efficiently store older data, but still make it searchable and usable and retrievable. Whereas a backup tape, obviously disaster recovery. So no, a backup tape is not an archive, or a backup is not an archive, and should not be viewed that way.
Excellent. Let's talk a little bit about the impact of email archiving on litigation. Will an email archiving system help me or be a liability if my company is sued?
That's a great question, and depending on the audience you have in the room, years ago, or even just a couple of years ago, most corporate legal counsels viewed especially email as a huge liability. And because of that, many, many, many companies put in place 30, 60, 90-day deletion policies, which basically meant that they have a policy on the email server that as an email ages 30 days, for example, it's deleted. And in that way, corporate legal counsels and CEOs and CIOs thought they were lessening their liability by shortening the amount of time that, what we term smoking guns could be in the system. Kind of a broad statement there. Many CEOs especially assume that in a large company that they run, there's probably derogatory emails or emails that would cause them problems if anybody ever found them. And we term these smoking guns. So by putting a 30, 60, 90-day deletion policy on the email server, they think they're getting rid of those smoking guns. In reality, we all know that employees will save emails no matter what. They'll do it in all kinds of interesting ways, but the biggest way is that they'll create PSTs or personal archives and put those personal archives on removable media or external hard disks or USB thumb drives or network drives and these kinds of things. So deleting an email off the email server doesn't lessen your liability. It just makes it just a tiny bit more difficult to find. Over the last couple of years, many corporate legal counsels have started to recognize that, yes, number one, I cannot guarantee that emails are deleted. Therefore, you know, like the Bill Gates case and the Department of Justice case, you know, a couple of years ago, Bill Gates was surprised on the witness stand with his own deleted emails. They're starting to recognize that, yeah, they cannot guarantee that an email is going to be deleted. And in also in a lot of cases that an outside legal counsel will probably find that one email that really looks bad, but the surrounding content or the email thread that led up to that message, in a lot of cases, will explain that message and basically lower its liability or its smoking gun point value. So that many corporate legal counsels now basically admit that I would rather keep all my emails and have the complete thread versus having an outside legal counsel find that one really bad one and not have the stuff surrounding it. So nowadays, it's probably, you know, it's probably going to be a 49-51% type of thing, but I think just barely most companies now are starting to think that keeping email for longer periods of time, if you have the storage resources, is probably going to lessen liability rather than increase it.
Well, Barry, I think that wraps it up for today's question and answer session. I want to thank our email archiving expert and frequent search storage contributor, Bill Tolson, for sharing his insights and expertise with us today. Bill, thanks so much.
Thank you, Stephen.
I'm Stephen Bigelow, features writer for TechTarget Storage Media Group, and you can learn more about storage and email archiving at www.searchstorage.com.